and BR Part Heard.
Hello and welcome to this inaugural episode of 7BR's new podcast series, Part Heard. I'm Eleanor Day, and over the course of this series, I'll be talking to a cross-section of chambers on a variety of topics, including remote hearings in the era of COVID-19, the proposed changes to jury trials, and the law of vicarious liability in light of the recent Morrison's and Barclays judgments. We've utilised 7BR's multidisciplinary nature in order to discuss a wide range of subjects and to examine issues through the lenses of those practising in sometimes vastly different areas of law. The length of these episodes mean that the podcast can only offer a snapshot of our members' expertise, but we hope that, as our name suggests, these conversations are just the beginning of further discussion and collaboration. This week, I'm talking to Kate Temple-Mabe. Kate joined 7BR in October 2019 following the successful completion of her pupillage, and she has experience across all of Chambers' practice areas. We'll be discussing what she's learned from working during the current pandemic, the usefulness and limits of remote hearings, and whether this technological shift is really here to stay.
Kate, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Ellie. Thanks for having me. I'm very flattered to be doing the introductory 7BR podcast.
Perhaps we could begin with you describing what your practice looked like pre-pandemic.
Oh, those halcyon days. Like most of our very junior members, was practicing across all of Chambers' practice areas. So in crime, family and civil, going all over the country. So our set does a lot of work in the Southeastern Circuit, also in the Midland Circuit. So I was traveling a great deal and up and down courts all over the land, Monday to Friday. And that was the largest part of my work, was court-based work, the occasional bit of paperwork, but a lot of court appearances in far-flung areas.
So how has that changed in the last 3 or 4 months? Significantly with the traveling, I suppose, but in terms of the content of your work, has that changed at all?
Yes. I mean, obviously, along with, I think, probably everybody at the bar who has a court-based practice, work sort of fell off a cliff right at the beginning because everyone was shuffling around trying to find out how to make that happen. In terms of content, I'm doing the same sort of things in terms of the same levels of hearing, but I've seen the, breakdown change slightly. Family, for example, family courts have been cracking on through the pandemic in a way that criminal courts and civil courts have found it difficult to do. And a lot of that is because the family work that I tend to do is child work. So there's a real interest in getting things done, and you can't just delay. Arguably, you could say the same thing about crime, but things have tended to tick along in family. So I've started seeing a great deal more of that. Criminal work as well has continued at some rate, interim hearings, of course, not trials. Civil work has been the thing that I've seen the most lull in, because obviously people can adjourn things or delay them for some time without causing an enormous crisis.
Have you had to adjust the way that you prepare for hearings or your style of advocacy?
Oh, absolutely. Remote advocacy is quite a different thing from in-person advocacy. I mean, I think that it's easy to say, oh yes, there's sort of an added factor in person, but it's really true. There's a great deal of your advocacy that is in-person communication, and that's meeting people and sort of empathizing with them through body language and eye contact and all these subtle things that you don't really realize you're doing. And so it's been interesting to try and figure out how to bring that added value in a scenario where, for example, in telephone hearings, you're literally only using your voice. And then video hearings bring in a whole new set of problems, like what does my background look like and how am I sitting and what's my posture like? And there's all kinds of other questions that need to be answered. And so I think, yes, we've had to think about, as barristers, we've had to think about how do I start to build in an advocacy style, which is tailored to working remotely.
And how do you mitigate some of those challenges? Or is it just simply impossible because of the technological barriers?
I mean, there's some things about it that are difficult. You can never really replicate the kind of connection you get with somebody when you meet them face to face, whether that's your own client, your opponent, or the judge or the court clerk. But we can try, I think, to think about ways to bring in those extra elements. One thing is client care before a hearing. So, for example, if you've a telephone hearing with a client, I've found it helpful to put myself in that client's shoes and think, well, what would I think if I was just about to be parachuted into a telephone conference in which I can't say anything, and this voice of somebody I've never met before is going to be speaking for me? And so I think it's very important for us in the sort of client care stages in the lead up to a hearing to make sure we're giving our clients the attention that they need to feel like they're part of the process. So I'll ring my clients up ahead of time. I'll introduce myself. If I've never met them before in person, I'll say, you know, I'm sorry, we're meeting this way. I'll do my best to put them at ease and explain everything that's going to happen and what it's going to be like, down to what the, you know, automated voice person will say when they pick up the phone. Just walk them into it so that they're not feeling completely detached from the process, because I imagine a court hearing is a scary enough thing, but when you can't even see the people who are purporting to speak for you, it must be quite jarring, I think.
There have been some suggestions that remote hearings could become the default in commercial courts because they work so well and there's hardly been any backlog. Obviously, it's impossible to imagine the same ever being said for crime, for instance, but you work across multiple practice areas, and I was wondering what differences you've noticed in the relative usefulness or limits of technology in different courts, particularly with regards to, as you've already mentioned, the experience of lay clients, for instance.
Yeah, that's a really good question, Ellie. I think that I can understand why areas such as commercial areas, civil areas of practice, where largely the clients are professional clients, remote hearings start to look very attractive. Everyone who's involved is a professional. If it's a business, it probably litigates, not all the time, but fairly frequently. People understand the process that they're getting into, and perhaps because they are in a professional capacity, have access to equipment that will help them with the remote trial process. However, in family, for example, and also in crime, you have lay clients who are not necessarily familiar with the court process. A lot of times won't have access to good quality equipment or good quality Wi-Fi or even a quiet room in their house. And for those people, it can be very problematic to say, okay, well, now we're going to do things remotely. And I think we also have to consider that in family and criminal law, well, I'm speaking specifically about maybe public family law, these are circumstances where the state is proposing to intervene quite significantly in somebody's life. And in order for that to be legitimate, it has to have some authority. That process has to have some authority. And I think that one problem that's emerged in my experience of remote hearings is that authority can break down in circumstances where you've got barristers who are sitting in what is obviously their living room or their kitchen, a judge who's more recently they're in court, but at the beginning of things, judges were also in their living room or kitchen. And it damages our ability that we normally have, which is to go into court and in that court environment be sort of endowed with this authority, which makes the process something that people respect. And I think there's a breaking down of that authority in a remote hearing. And I've had all sorts of, I know everyone could already spout off a litany of hilarious episodes in hearings where clients have done the washing up during a judgment or started playing PlayStation during a judgment. Or a colleague today was telling me about a client who said he couldn't turn to a page of the bundle because he was currently on the toilet. I think there is... we do need to be asking ourselves questions about whether a remote court is a legitimate court, and what steps can we take to make it appear legitimate in the eyes of the people who are using it. Because when I'm doing a hearing for somebody, I need to be their voice and not myself. And that's very important. Otherwise, they feel as if it's just a bunch of suited random people in a room talking about what's a highly personal issue for them.
Yeah, of course. And you mentioned access to the actual technology itself. And obviously, that's a particular concern, the role of digital exclusion and the barriers that that causes with access to justice. Is that something that you've seen evidence of?
Certainly,
as well?
Yes. I mean, I've had examples of cases where hearings can't proceed when they need to proceed because there just isn't access. I do occasionally represent clients who are homeless. I represent clients who live in supported hostels. And it's very important to remember that not everyone that we're dealing with in this profession, pardon me, has access to a Wi-Fi connection and a device. And so we can make assumptions very easily in the legal profession about what people may or may not have access to, but we do need to check that, especially when we're dealing with vulnerable clients.
In light of what you've learned throughout this period, do you have any top tips for remote working, either for other people within the profession or maybe your past self?
Yes. Well, to tie into what I was saying earlier, I do think that as advocates, we really need to think seriously about how we are portraying ourselves in a remote hearing. And things like backgrounds are very important. It's very tempting to do the suit on the top half, jeans on the bottom half, but does that make you feel less professional in such a way that it affects your advocacy? We need to be very careful about making sure that we are still the voice of our clients and not of ourselves, and that we are still coming across in a way that instills confidence and authority. So I do think that advocates need to think carefully about the way that they're setting up their remote hearings. Is it serving themselves only, or is it also serving their clients? I think in terms of preparation, we need to be very aware that some of the sort of last minute stuff that we used to do, we used to rock up to court and have a last minute, you know, conversation with our opposing counsel, and maybe we'd make some agreements, we'd make a call to the solicitor, we'd make some more agreements, we'd speak to the lay client, we'd exchange papers that maybe other people hadn't received. All that used to happen in a kind of shuffle ahead of a hearing, and that can't really happen anymore. So we do need to be much more prepared much sooner and have, for example, a fully paginated bundle that everyone's agreed. If there are points that are going to be conceded, those instructions need to be gotten earlier, because we can't have these sort of last minute discussions. And it does mean that we do need to start preparing a bit earlier and better, and that it can only be a good thing. I do have concerns, though, that if we're moving to having to clear a backlog, and that is being done by listing back-to-back-to-back remote hearings, that could jeopardize that. So we need to make sure that if we're moving to remote hearings, we're building in enough time to prepare for them adequately.
Finally, then, it doesn't sound, from what you've said, like the last few months have offered any kind of glimpse into a sparkly new future of remote working. But I do wonder what you think the role of technology will be moving forward, and whether there are any aspects of the current setup which could be advantageous as and when we slowly return to
certainly normal. And yes, I mean, I've been, I think, a bit cautious about the value of remote hearings in some ways in this conversation, but ultimately there are lots of good things about it, and there are, for example, some clients who feel that it's much better for them, and it works better for them, and it's going to need to be a decision that's taken in each case on a hearing by hearing basis, almost in discussion with our clients. Is this something that we want to do? Is this something we can do? Will they feel as if it's a fair thing for them to do? I think it could be very, very useful, for example, for dealing with interim hearings where there's only counsel present, hearings where witness evidence needs to be called and the witnesses are in far-flung locations. There are ways that we can use this technology which will really benefit everybody. But I think we have to be sure that we're not only thinking of it as an administrative problem, but we are thinking about it as a way of ensuring that our justice system works in such a way that it maintains enough authority that people feel as if there's finality in proceedings and they don't feel as if they've been the victim of something that's run away without them. So yes, there's a lot of things to be cautious about, but ultimately the technology, getting everyone on board with the technology is brilliant. Getting the courts on board with the technology is brilliant. Getting everyone who works in the court system a laptop, that should have happened ages ago. But I just think we need to be very careful about making broad sweep statements like everything's going to be remote now.
Kate Temple-Mabe, thank you very much for your time. If you would like to discuss any of the issues raised in this episode or ask further questions of Kate, feel free to contact me at ede@7br.co.uk. We hope you enjoyed this first episode of 7BR's Part Heard. Do join us next week when I'll be talking to Mariam Syed and Vittoria Trigilio about the proposed changes to jury trials.